This is DW News live from Berlin. Is this the end of the battle that has come to symbolize Ukraine's struggle against Russian invaders? Buses evacuate soldiers from the Mariupol steel plant where they'd been holding out for weeks against the Russian onslaught. Also on the program, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he won't support Finland or Sweden joining NATO, accusing both of harboring terrorists. And a big setback for Hezbollah and its allies in Lebanon's parliamentary elections. The Iran-backed party and its partners are set to lose their majority in parliament. We ask our correspondent in Beirut what people there are expecting from their new government. I'm Phil Gale. Welcome to the program. Ukrainian soldiers from the besieged Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol have begun to arrive in the town of Anovsk, a town near the Russian border under the control of Russia-backed separatists. Earlier on Monday, Russia agreed a deal to evacuate wounded fighters who had been holding out inside the plant since early March. The departure of Ukrainian soldiers could signal the end of Russia's long siege of the steelworks, which has become a symbol of Ukrainian resistance. We can get more from DW correspondent Fanny Fashar in Kyiv. Welcome, Fanny. What are you hearing about this movement of fighters out of Mariupol?
We're hearing that the first wounded soldiers apparently have already arrived in that Russian-controlled territory, Novoazovsk, which is about 40 kilometers from Mariupol. So this is Donbas region. This is basically the place where there's heavy fighting between Russian and Ukrainian soldiers for weeks now. And in fact, people here, the very first that I could speak to, because actually there's curfew, there's hardly anyone on the street, ordinary Ukrainian citizens are shaking their head in disbelief, trying to understand what is really happening. Because if really these wounded soldiers are now handed in or voluntarily hand themselves in to Russian forces, what is going to happen to them? What is their fate? After all, it's the Russian forces that have been pounding heavily Mariupol and also this Azov steel plant, where it's believed about 600 Azov regiment soldiers have been holed up. It's unclear whether it's really just the wounded soldiers who made their way out there with the help of medics, or also the active soldiers, basically. Is this really an end to the siege, actually, of what we have seen play out around Azov steel plant? Or is this going to continue this fighting between Russians and Ukrainians over the control of the Azov steel plant? We do not know yet, as we're trying to gather information ourselves. But certainly it's quite a shocking development here, because you have to understand, of course, that Azov steel plant is seen as the last defense, to say so, for the city of Mariupol, which really has a symbolic meaning here for the people in Ukraine. It already had in 2014, when the war in the Donbas region, where Mariupol is, has begun. So very decisive hours right now. What does it really mean for Ukraine? So far, we did not hear anything from President Zelensky on this latest development. Only we have heard from the leader of the Azov regiment inside the steel plant, saying that he's fulfilling orders based on the supreme military commander. But Zelensky is actually the one who commands the military, who is the head of the military. But he's the one who is silent right now. This can be due to the fact that a lot of the process that's now being concluded can only be concluded if nobody talks. So everyone here who's still up in Kyiv is waiting for some information. What is really happening right now at that Azov steel plant?
OK, thank you for that, DW correspondent Fanny Fashar in Kyiv. Well, Ukrainian forces in northeast of the country have mounted a counter-attack, pushing Russian troops away from the second-largest city, Kharkiv. There's also heavy fighting in the eastern region of Luhansk. But there, too, Ukrainian officials and Western analysts say Russian forces are struggling to achieve their objectives.
When Russian troops first entered Ukraine, a quick victory is what President Putin may have been hoping for, but a long, drawn-out conflict is what he is getting. Ukrainian troops say they've managed to push the Russians back to the border. And as arms from the West continue to roll in, Russian troops have been forced to change strategies. Analysts say what's happening now could become a war of attrition.
The development of the war has confounded analysts, I think, at every turn. I think that Obviously, in the initial stages, there was the belief that Russia would probably win quickly. They didn't. They withdrew from around Kyiv in order to concentrate their forces to attack eastern Ukraine, take the Donbass. And what is interesting is the extent to which they have now are now in the process, I think, of failing at that.
This footage, released by the Ukrainian armed forces, purports to show the destruction of a Russian-held bridge in the Luhansk region. Ukrainian forces have also recaptured several villages. Ruska Lutsova is one of them. Residents here say it was under Russian control for 2 months. Though the fighting has stopped, the village now lies in ruins. It's scary to see it like this. The village was beautiful and big. Now it's all broken. Everything's destroyed. The village council, a school, everything is destroyed. People have also died. As the war drags on and the death toll continues to climb, so too do the odds that this war will have no winners.
And Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his country will not approve any request from Finland or Sweden to join NATO and that their delegations should not come to Ankara to try and change his mind. Sweden had previously announced that it would seek a NATO membership following Finland's decision and ending 2 centuries of Swedish neutrality. Both countries want to bolster their security following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. DW's NATO correspondent Terry Schulz told me more about President Erdogan's objections.
You know, this came somewhat as a surprise, Phil, because just over the weekend, the Turkish foreign minister assured allies that he did not want to delay the membership of Sweden and Finland. And so it seemed like things would be able to be worked out. And then President Erdogan held a press conference today and said he absolutely won't allow the two Nordic countries into the alliance. He says that they have failed to extradite some 33 people that he has requested and that this amounts to harboring terrorists. So while Sweden and Finland said that they were ready to open talks with Erdogan on his complaints, he has told them not to come. And so it will be up to other allies to negotiate with Ankara and to make sure that this does not hold up what all of the other allies see as a very welcome addition to the alliance.
And so do these Turkish objections kill these Finnish and Swedish bids?
Well, Finland and Sweden haven't even submitted their bids yet, so it's way too early to say that. And I would guess that this is just Erdogan's opening gambit. He sees a way to exploit what has probably been a grudge for many years, a way to elevate his concerns and his argument against the European Union. It's not only Finland and Sweden, that any members of the PKK, which the EU has listed as a terrorist organization, should be extradited upon his request. But, you know, Erdogan has a lot of asks from other allies, predominantly the U.S. and some fighter jet deals that are sort of hung up on Erdogan's purchase of a Russian missile defense system. So there are a lot of negotiations to be had. As I say, this is Erdogan's opening gambit. He sees a way to use the situation to his advantage. But I would guess in the end that he will be convinced not to carry through with this threat.
Thank you for that, Terry. Terry Schulz in Stockholm. Here's a quick look at some stories away from the war. France's former Labour minister, Elisabeth Borne, will be the country's second female prime minister, replacing Jean Castex. The government reshuffle aims to reinvigorate President Macron's centrist party ahead of parliamentary elections. He hopes to secure a majority for his reformist agenda, including a controversial pensions overhaul. Veteran Kenyan politician Raila Odinga has named Martha Karua as his running mate in August's presidential election. Ms. Karua is a former justice minister and champion of women's rights. Her success in male-dominated politics earned her the nickname Iron Lady. A win would make her Kenya's first female deputy president. President of Guinea-Bissau has dissolved parliament and announced early parliamentary elections. Omaro Embalo cited legislators' unresolvable differences with the presidency. The country has experienced 4 military coups in as many decades, most recently in 2012. In February, 11 people died in violence described as an attempted coup. Sri Lanka's new prime minister says the country's down to its last day of petrol and is printing money to pay civil servants. In a TV address, Ranil Wickremesinghe, who was appointed on Thursday, said the country needs $75 million to pay for essential imports. The crisis has fueled anti-government protests. Now, early results from Lebanon's parliamentary elections indicate losses for allies of the country's Iran-backed Hezbollah group. Final results are still to be determined, but a Christian party with strong ties to Saudi Arabia and the US has made gains. It's unclear whether Hezbollah and its allies will retain their majority in the country's 128-seat parliament.
Hezbollah supporters struck an upbeat tone on election night, but it soon became apparent that their cheering was premature. The parliamentary bloc led by the Shiite Islamist group took a major hit. Early results show that its allies have lost support. Opponents of Hezbollah made gains, including the Christian Lebanese Forces Party, which is linked to Saudi Arabia. The early result comes amid the worst economic and financial crisis Lebanon has ever seen. The deadly explosion in the port of Beirut nearly 2 years ago made things even more dire. Many people can barely afford basic necessities. Even polling stations like this one in Tripoli were not spared from the daily power cuts. Before I die, I want to see Lebanon the way it was when I was young. We went to school, finished our education. Lebanon was Lebanon then. I want to die knowing Lebanon is back. I voted for change, of course, because we can't go on like this. Lebanon needs to wake up and lift itself up, and that's something I support, so that our children can continue to live in this country. Voter turnout was only 41%, and many observers say the country's complex, so-called confessional power-sharing political system has paralyzed the state. But others hope that the success of opposition parties may finally lead to real change.
Well, DW correspondent Rebecca Ritters is covering the election from Beirut. She told us what the new government might look like.
Still a little bit too early to be able to make any predictions. As you said yourself, votes are still trickling in. But even after the votes are all completely counted, Lebanon is notorious for taking a very long time to form government. So exactly how it will look is hard to say at this point. But as you mentioned, Hezbollah does look to be losing its parliamentary majority. That instead going to the far-right Christian Lebanese forces, part of the so-called Saudi-US alliance. And they will be able to there make up an alliance, a coalition government. They'll have to nominate a prime minister who will then be able to form a cabinet. Now, that could take months. Lebanon has been known to be without a government for 2 years at a time as the sort of infighting and faction behind the scenes faction fighting goes on. But what is clear, and what was really going into this election, one of the huge issues was the Hezbollah issue, and it does appear the people have voted with their feet, many going into this election saying Hezbollah has caused all the problems, other people saying that Hezbollah isn't the only problem in this country and we need to deal with corruption on all levels. But people certainly voting with their feet, a lot of independent candidates also winning seats. We're looking at maybe 10 seats for the so-called change opposition candidates, and they'll play an important role as you've got these two opposing blocs, the Lebanese forces on one side, Hezbollah on the other, and these independent candidates playing quite an important role in the middle.
Rebecca Ritters in Beirut. Now, this year's Eurovision winners have received a hero's welcome back home in Ukraine. Kalush Orchestra performed their song, Stefania, to border guards at the frontier between Ukraine and Poland. The band's male members had received special permission to leave Ukraine to perform at Eurovision in Italy. Their win, a clear show of popular support for the war-ravaged country. Here's a reminder of our top story at this hour. Ukrainian soldiers from the besieged Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol are arriving in the town of Novoa-Zovsk, a border town controlled by Russia-backed separatists. This comes after Russia agreed a deal to evacuate wounded fighters who've been holding out inside the plant since early March. More world news at the top of the hour. Rob Watts has your